Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.
Thanks for checking out the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday special podcast. I am Terry Foy. We begin joined by committee chair Jack Hayes, fresh off of the ESPNU selection show. And Mr. Hayes, to start, it's kind of a broad question. How do you characterize this process relative to other selection processes that you've been a part of?
I think it's challenging because there continue to be more and more really good teams with really good resumes. And so this is my fourth year on it, and we've each year you seem to have more and more challenges. Some years there are some things that kind of work themselves out with teams that are probably that go into their conference tournaments as the one seeds, winning them. But every time that doesn't happen, you see where this starts to get more challenging because there's more and more teams for fewer spots.
And let's start at the top of the bracket because Penn State has had such a good season and certainly a dramatic finish to their regular season in a Big Ten championship game over Johns Hopkins. How solid were they as that number one seed?
Yeah, I mean, great strength of schedule, great RPI, great record, played strong quality teams. So, yeah, they played themselves right into that and really, I would say, have maintained that spot for weeks now. So my guess is that it's probably not, you know, it's probably not a surprise to most folks watching tonight when they were the number one seed.
There was one minor surprise, really, in the entire field. I projected Duke to probably be around the four seed. So when they came out as the number two seed, there were aspects of it that didn't surprise me. 7 top 20 wins, some really good metrics in addition to that. It was kind of only that early end of the ACC tournament that I think made some folks scratch their heads. So what was it about the Blue Devils' resume that slotted them in that second spot?
You know, we looked closely at Duke and Virginia in that spot, and, you know, they both had 7 wins in the top 20. Duke had 2 in the top 5. I don't think Virginia had any. Duke had a stronger strength of schedule, so it was very close. And then Duke had beaten Virginia head-to-head. So at the end of the day, those were really what came in decision to put Duke at 2 and Virginia at 3.
You mentioned head-to-head, and over the course of the 10-plus years that I've been following this process, typically there's one variable that rises a little bit above the others relative to maybe separating out tiebreakers. In recent years, we've heard a head-to-head. At the beginning of the decade, strength of schedule was heavily emphasized. In the middle of the decade, top 5 wins seemed like they bared a lot of importance. Was there any metric that felt like it kept popping up through your conversations as being a helpful tiebreaker, so to speak?
Well, you know, you go by the same metrics each year, and you go by the strength of schedule, you go by the RPI, you go by the win-loss record, wins in the top 10 and the top 20, and then after that, sometimes you still can't, make a separation, and so then you have to move on. And so, like in the example we just talked about, head-to-head then comes into play and makes and ends up making a difference. Now, if those two, say that the two teams we were talking about for the second and third hadn't played each other, well, then we wouldn't be able to do that, and we'd have to look to something else. So what we have seen is that when it continues to stay very competitive in trying to figure out how you make a decision on an at-large or in a seeding process, you do have to look at anything that you can beyond the usual metrics, and head-to-head is one common opponent, but those are two that you know, some years and in some cases they may exist and you may not have them, but if you can resort to a common opponent or a head-to-head, we would certainly do that and have done that.
You mentioned on the ESPNU show that there were essentially four teams competing for three spots, the suggestion being Syracuse, Maryland, Johns Hopkins, and Cornell were all in contention for those last three at-large spots. Can you characterize what separated that group from, say, the group that was a little bit more solidly in, like Notre Dame and Loyola, who ended up being the 7 and 8 seeds?
Yes. So as we went through that, felt that really Loyola and Notre Dame, they were felt that they were solidly ahead of that other group. It was just a matter of looking at them on everything from, again, strength of schedule, RPI, and ultimately came down to RPI, who had the highest RPI loss. Even that was another criteria that we had to look at to try to separate those two. And that's where we fell with Notre Dame at 7 and Loyola at 8. And then looked at the group of, after that, you have that right, we looked at Cornell, Maryland, Johns Hopkins, and Syracuse.
And for the Big Red, their resume didn't measure up. Was there a particular element that made it feel like they were the team among that four that wasn't going to make the cut?
You know, again, really, really tough. But as we looked at those, you know, Cornell had the least number of top 20 wins. And when we tried to compare each of those four against the other three, when we did that with Cornell, you know, Cornell had, as I said, they had two top 20 wins, I believe. Maryland had 5. Hopkins had 3 and had the number one strength of schedule. And Syracuse had 5 and had beaten Cornell head to head. So as we went through comparing those four schools, each one against the other three, that's where we came out with Cornell being the one out in that group.
And as we wind this conversation down, one team that captivated a lot of folks' attention after losing the Southern Conference Championship to Richmond was High Point, specifically by virtue of their two top 5 wins on the road at Virginia and at Duke, but certainly counterbalanced by some really low RPI losses, certainly to St. John's and Jacksonville. How did High Point fit into the conversation, particularly relative to Cornell, Ohio State, and Denver, other teams that I assume were also in that bubble out conversation?
Yeah. We've talked about High Point, or maybe not High Point specifically over the last 2 weeks, but we've talked about how you value wins like the wins that they had versus the losses that they had at the time. And we've talked about this with the regional advisory committee made up of head coaches for the last 2 weeks, because we anticipated, or had to anticipate, what would happen if we came into this weekend and High Point did not earn that automatic qualifier. And, you know, it's a tough one, because those wins that they have certainly are great. There's a lot of schools in there that, and Denver and Ohio State were among those that we discussed, that had top 20 wins, top 10 wins, but did not have the types of losses that High Point had. So at the end of the day, that's where they ended up coming out of that group. But you feel for them, because they did. They had two great wins, but we can't lose sight of the fact that that a lot of the schools that were under consideration also had multiple wins in the top 10, multiple wins in the top 20.
Well, Jack Hayes, we really appreciate your time on the Inside the Cross podcast and look forward to watching an exciting NCAA tournament.
Thanks for having me.
And the Inside the Cross Selection Sunday podcast continues with Penn State head coach Jeff Tambroni, whose Nittany Lions are the number one seed in the 2019 NCAA tournament. They'll play the winner of the playing game on Sunday at noon on ESPNU. Coach Tambroni, first of all, congratulations on a Big Ten championship. The broadcaster spoke during the game over the weekend about how, coming off of your regular season kind of close win over Rutgers in Happy Valley in State College, that you felt like you needed to be pushed a little bit, responded against the Scarlet Knights in the semifinals, and then once again were pushed by Johns Hopkins in the title game. So how do you characterize how happy you were to see your team respond in that way?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, thanks, Terry. Coming off that last game, we just felt like, I don't want to use the word complacent because I do think our guys have come back each and every week, and I think they've responded really well early in the week, and they've worked very hard, and they seem very focused each week, which has been so much fun to be around. And then, you know, I think when we went into that tournament, we just felt like we didn't play as hard as we were, maybe towards the middle or latter parts of the season. We just knew that against the competition, certainly in that Big Ten Conference tournament, that we would need not just play well, but we're going to need to play hard as well with the respect of both Rutgers and whoever the opponent was going to be if we were to go by Rutgers. And, you know, I was really proud of the way they competed and played. You know, we had not won a game in the conference tournament in our previous trip. So, you know, all in all, I thought our guys really responded really well, and I was proud of the way they competed.
In speaking about focus and avoiding complacency, last season in the equivalent game, University of Maryland was tested by Robert Morris, who was coming off of a play-in game victory. And we saw the Terps respond in the second half and en route to a Final Four appearance. What's it like trying to prepare your team for an opponent who's going to be coming off of a short week? You don't have all week to prepare for them because you won't know who your opponent is until Wednesday night. What's your approach to preparing for this game?
You know, one of the things that we try to do all year long, and I think has benefited us greatly, is we've really spent the majority of each week just preparing ourselves and spending probably less time concerning ourselves about our opponent. You know, certainly in our defensive end, I think that's where you need to spend a lot of time, or at least a good portion of your time, getting to know the strengths and weaknesses of, you know, your opponent's offense. But I think for us in our offensive end, we really try to focus on our own guys and seeing if we can get those guys a chance to stop thinking so much and just kind of reading and reacting. So it's going to be a challenge no matter what, probably for both teams. You know, our challenge is not even knowing who we're going to play at this point. Their challenge is going to be coming off a shortened week. So I think both teams probably have to just deal with it and just keep it simple. I think, you know, at this point, you can certainly either change the approach because it's the playoffs and it's one and done, or you can continue to do what you've done all year. And I think we're going to try to choose the latter. We're going to continue to do what we've done all year and not change too much. I mean, I think there's some things that we can certainly adjust coming off of this weekend's games to make ourselves better if that's the case. But for the most part, we're going to just really worry about Penn State this week. And once that game is determined, try to just make some minor tweaks, but just try to do the best job we can of just providing our best version on game day on Sunday.
You mentioned firsts, winning your first Big Ten tournament game. Will you talk to your team this week about what it would mean to this program to win an NCAA tournament game?
No. You know, I think at this point, it's just you know, they've earned the right to be in this position. I want them to enjoy it. And I think it would be probably counterproductive to talk too much from a historical perspective. Most of these guys were not on those teams. So, you know, at this point, nobody's won a playoff game in 2019. I get the narrative of our history, and we're working hard to try to change that. But at this point, the 2019 version is going into this tournament and that selection, just like everybody else. Everybody's 0-0, and so at that point, I think it's probably going to be in our best interest just to focus on what we can do to make ourselves better on a daily basis, what we can do to set a counter our opponent's strengths and do the best job of highlighting our strengths. And I think anything outside of that would become probably more of a distraction than an asset.
Last question is, all of that being said, you yourself have extensive NCAA tournament experience. How do you plan to apply that, and what are some of the lessons that you learned that were informed over the course of your tenure at Cornell as the Big Red teams continued to make it deeper and deeper into the NCAA tournament during your tenure?
Yeah, I think probably more inside the coach's office, you know, in constant conversations that we have together. I think we've played in a lot of games with high intensity. I mean, having the Big Ten tournament, two games in 3 days, having the weekend tournament down in Charlotte this past year, about the middle portion of the year with Jacksonville and Cornell with two games in 3 days. All these things, I think, really helped our experience. So the one thing that I would just talk to our guys about is just doing just what I talked about coming into this thing is, you know, try to do simple really well. I think when it comes to this, you can get caught up in the emotion of playing a playoff game, and you tend to get away from what has worked, or your own strengths. So just keeping things real simple through the course of our preparation as coaches. We don't want to overdo it. I think you can also tend to overtrain. So give these guys plenty of rest at this point in the season. I think unless it's completely necessary, we shouldn't be doing it. And so just try to just do what we need to do and then get them off their feet as much as possible, allow them to enjoy it. It's the first time they've been around here without classes and without exams. So enjoy the week with this group and try to just maximize our time together and just be really efficient with our preparation. I think that's what I learned from my time in the playoffs at Cornell.
Well, Coach Tamburoni, really appreciate your time on the Inside the Cross Selection Show podcast. Good luck as you prepare for whoever it is your opponent will be on Sunday, and certainly enjoy this week.
Great. Thanks so much for having me, Terry.
Well, first things first, we have to talk about the play-in game, Terry. That is a game on Wednesday, May 8th at Marist. UMBC comes in at 6-8. Unbelievable that this team made the tournament. I mean, this was a group, they were just dead in the water. They were 3-8, 1-4. Binghamton beat UMass Lowell, and that set up, as Anish would say, the penultimate game against Hartford. It was a winner-take-all. That win snapped a six-game road losing streak, and UMBC hasn't lost since. Chris Cotter, does the winner of UMBC Marist have any chance against Penn State?
No.
Yeah, I compared it to a presidential funeral. I'm wondering if ESPN should actually send announcers there.
That's harsh.
You think that's harsh?
Yeah, that's
harsh. Is that too harsh?
Cinderella, man. Didn't Virginia and Hoops lose?
Chaminade.
Yeah.
Virginia lost to UMBC.
Yeah,
UMBC beat Virginia and Hoops. Why can't they do it in lacrosse?
There you go. Oh, wow. Connor, that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. That game will be on Sunday at noon, live on ESPNU. We're still working on who's going to commentate that game. Penn State's 14-1. They haven't won a playoff game since ever. They've been playing lacrosse for 100 years, and it looks like they'll get their first playoff win. Good luck to Marist and UMBC in that play-in game and then traveling to Happy Valley. There's a great restaurant there that serves wonderful fries by the golf course on the other side of town.
Yes.
Great hamburgers and fries.
Okay, the hamburgers. You get some protein with those fries. Better make sure you get the protein. Otherwise, you're just carbo loading up. You don't need that.
Terry, back to you.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with UMBC coach Ryan Moran, as his Retrievers are coming off of an America East Championship and head to Marist Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. to take on the Red Foxes in the play-in game. The winner advances to take on number one seed Penn State Sunday at noon on ESPNU. Coach Moran, thanks so much for joining us. How do you characterize just the whirlwind that your team has experienced in your last three games over the course of the last 8 days?
Just like to think we were a resilient bunch, you know, and it was exciting, you know, scrapping and clawing to even get into our conference tournament, and then to be able to, you know, travel up to Long Island and play two really, really talented teams in Stony Brook and Vermont and be able to get wins, you know, it was just really exciting for the guys because, you know, our season definitely didn't go on the trajectory we thought it would go in August, but here we are. You know, we thought we could win that conference early on, and we ended up doing it. And, you know, I'm just really excited for our guys and for the coaching staff and for the university.
So along those lines, at one point this season, you were 3-8, but within that, you had 3 1-goal losses and an additional 2-goal loss. So clearly you were pretty close. Can you characterize the development arc that this team has taken, say, over the last month that positioned you to win the last 3 games in a row and put yourself in this playing game position?
Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, we started off the year, we're no stranger. Other teams get injuries, and we had some injuries, and we went down with two of our starting close guys in the spring, and it just, you know, we had to put some pieces in some different parts, and those guys were developing and learning how to play in those spots, and, you know, they had their ups and their downs, and then as we kind of turned that corner into April, the consistency within their play and the development, you know, through especially on the defensive side of the ball with Coach Kester developing them, and, you know, everything started to kind of come together a little bit when we needed it to.
And when you look at, you know, the offensive production, it's really taken a step forward, led by a sophomore in Trevor Pachorky, Ryan Ferrali, a junior, 2 40-point scorers. What has been the key to the success of the unit overall?
You know, I just think we got parts on offense that are you know, just selfless players first and foremost. And I think they've bought into a culture of being a really fundamentally sound team and a team that shares the ball. And, you know, and guys that, you know, have just done a great job developing and playing with each other and developing chemistry, especially.
So the last question about this unit or this team in particular is, when you look at the specialty positions, facing off at 42%, saving the ball at 41%, puts you in a position where you really do have to game plan how to kind of build off of those. What's that been like?
Well, you know, we've obviously been still trying to develop those areas. We got young kids, you know, right now, you know, we have a freshman at times playing in the goal. And we have two freshmen facing off. And those kids are, you know, with each game, with each practice, with each week, they're getting better. So we're always kind of trying to develop those areas. But we got to make sure that we're strong everywhere else. I think our clearing game, I know the last half of the season, you know, we were looking at games where we were perfect in clearing, and that always helps. And then our shooting percentage, you know, when we get the ball, making sure that we're being, you know, efficient. And I think we are probably over 31% as a team right now, which I think is solid. So, you know, we're just trying to make up for it in other areas to be consistently competitive against anyone we go against.
Lastly, what do you know about Marist?
Well, they were on our schedule in 2017 and in 2018. And, you know, so we have a familiarity with our staff, being our third year. And just, you know, little that I know about, I'm looking at their schedule, and kind of downloading their last game. You know, they seem to be, a group that is, playing really well right now as well. And seems like they got some really good chemistry, and I know they're well coached, so they're obviously going to present a formidable challenge on Wednesday night.
Well, with that, Coach Moran, we'll let you get on to it. Enjoy this week of practice as you prepare for the Red Foxes, and we look forward to seeing you in action.
All right, great. Thanks, Terry.
To think about the Loyola-Syracuse game starting this tournament, as I sit next to Chris Cotter, and think about the Greyhounds not winning the Patriot League AQ, Syracuse not winning their game in the ACC. You got two teams coming in off of losses, but this is a great matchup. You know, at the beginning of the year, a lot of people thought Loyola was a contender for the national title. Pat Spencer has had the wonderful year, but too often their defense has gotten shredded. And then Cuse, slow start against Colgate, righted the ship, but then couldn't find the consistency. Do you think Syracuse, Chris Cotter, can stay with Pat Spencer, or do you think it's another 8-point effort?
Mellon and you know, that crew and Kennedy, I think they're pretty darn good on that side of the ball. Here's the thing with Syracuse, too, that jumps out at you. You talk about the loss to Cornell early. What about late, losing that 4-5 game in the ACC tournament? So now it's been a while since they played a game. Now they got to go on the road. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they start that game on the road, not where they typically start in these NCAA tournaments, inside the dome. That's going to be a big thing, first 5-6 minutes of that game.
Yeah, and Loyola is quite a home field advantage. I love the fans at Ridley. Clark, you tell me what it's like for a Syracuse player to lose in that ACC tournament. What are you doing up in Central New York this time of year for 2 weeks to get ready for a first playoff game?
Typically, we would barbecue because it would hit like 50 degrees out. So this
50.
Was, yeah, 50. This was a really fun time of the year. In all
has the ice left the lakes yet?
Yeah, the ice has left, but schools basically winding down, and this is a time you're with just your teammates, and it's an awesome opportunity. And I think outside of the collapse with the last 4 minutes of the North Carolina game, and we all felt like Syracuse was turning the corner in terms of having a great season, so I wouldn't be shocked if they come out swinging and playing great lacrosse. I think they're a hard team to scout for offensively because they're multi-dimensional and they don't really have that go-to guy.
It's a great game. When you think about the talent on the field, guys like Brett Kennedy, Nick Mellon, obviously, against Spencer, two good goalies, and Drake Porter and Jake Stover, the senior, playing in his last home game. Pat Spencer, senior, last home game. Those are two guys that led Loyola to a championship weekend. So this game will be undeniably a great start to round one. Congratulations to both Yale and Georgetown. Back in the NCAA tournament, Yale coming up short in the Ivy League final on Sunday, 12-3 record. They have one-goal losses. And then Georgetown, I thought, started this season super strong, had a kind of a mid-year swoon, and then finished champions of the Big East, 13-4. Remember last year the Hoyas gave Johns Hopkins everything they could handle in that opening round game in Baltimore. Probably should have won the game. But I've been really impressed with the Hoyas' ability to score goals this year, and especially late in the season. They're playing more up-tempo style. You got Wittenberg, Bucaro, Caraway. I like to call them the Swamp Dogs, Kark.
Swamp Dogs.
Because DC's the Swamp,
okay,
and the Hoyas are the Bulldogs. They're dogs, so I call them the Swamp Dogs. They can score.
Yeah. I love their energy from their coach, Kevin Warren.
Tissues. Yeah. You got to bring your tissues to every playoff game now. Yeah, these are all tissue territory.
Double fist pumps. But what makes that offense really click is I think Bucaro has a really good X presence. Jake Caraway is phenomenal on the righty wings. And now you throw this guy Lucas Wittenberg in, man. That dude had 8 assists in the Big East semifinal game against Providence. He can deal from up top.
I think he was the league MOP, wasn't he? Most outstanding player, MOP.
Oh, yeah, he should be. So I think this team is dangerous. Beware.
Yale coming off the loss. I thought Yale played a great semifinal game. Defensively, they made a few too many mistakes on Sunday in terms of their slide packages. Chris Cotter likes to analyze slide packages because he went to Georgia Tech. It's a really math and science school. So everything's about angles and geometry defensively. Is this Yale team, they're not where they were last year. In my eyes, though, they're still good enough to win a national championship, though.
Used to,
yes or no, or where are you on Yale?
Used to slide rules as opposed to slide packages in terms of Georgia Tech, but I think Yale's in a lot of ways right where they were last year, losing the Ivy League title game. You know, you kind of, okay, let's retrench, let's figure out what we need to do now to win it all, because they believe and they know. I mean, all those guys on that team, whether it's Morrill, whether it's Sessa, the veterans know what it takes to win a national title, so they know also you can lose the Ivy League tournament championship game. It's okay. You got another week, regroup, and start your tournament run here to win a national title. I think they're going to be right there at the end.
I agree with you. T.D. Erland, uncharacteristic game in the Ivy final against Penn. Defense can clean up. They can play better. Maybe that's a 2 or 3 goal difference. And then offensively, I think some midfielders need to find their form, you know, whether it's Jack Tye or Brian Tevlin, Kotler.
Yeah.
You know, they need just a little more out of those guys.
Star was okay in the Ivy League tournament.
I thought he was very good today in defeat.
That's all you need. You need him to be pretty good. They had a lot of turnovers early, some clears. They got to clean some things up, some of the things that you would normally expect that a Yale team to be really efficient at. A couple of mistakes. I think they'll get those things cleaned up, though, as we head into the NCAAs.
Yeah, it'll be Yale and Georgetown Saturday, 2:30, live on ESPNU, a game from Yale in New Haven. We expect Mike Golic perhaps to be on the call and make a little trip down from the worldwide leader in Bristol.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Show podcast continues with Yale head coach Andy Shea, whose Bulldogs will host Georgetown as the number 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. Coach Shea, we'll start there. What do you know about the Hoyas?
I know their head coach very well. That's about it at this point. I watched those guys, in my hotel room. I watched Georgetown games for entertainment because I think Kevin Warren's a great coach and he's a good friend of mine. So, never watched him to scout or anything else. So I got to get back in and watch him from a different perspective.
Certainly, you know a lot about your team coming off of a 2 games in 3 days situation, semifinal Ivy League victors over Cornell, and then on Sunday, one of the best games I've seen all year. Just a nip and tuck back and forth affair against Penn that ended up with Quakers 1-goal victors and Ivy League champs. What did you learn about your team this weekend?
Well, I don't think we got off the bus well, made sure my team knew that was challenging them, in the second quarter, to play harder and play as hard as they can, because I don't think we were playing all that hard, and they certainly responded. And, at the end of the day, we came up 1 goal short, and, as I told them, I said, I was proud of their effort at least, but our execution in the second half of the the weekend wasn't great to start that game. So I think we learned that, we're going to have to do a little bit better next time. So we'll see on Saturday how we can, get off the bus, so to speak.
Coming off of an NCAA championship, how has your team shown you that they understand the way in which the standard has continued to rise?
You know, that's a good question. I think that for us, it's standards the same no matter what, and we don't think about standard for us is an effort. It's effort based. It's not results based as much as it is process based. And you know, in as much as that, the results have been, you know, steadily improving over the years. So you know, we expect a you know, effort in the process, and you know, as a result, the outcome has been a little loftier over the years. So we try not to focus on the outcome, and it's getting harder. You know, I mean, I think you come off a national championship, it's a little tricky that next year, but I think our guys are doing a much better job of it the late in the year.
Well, Andy Shea, we really appreciate your time on the Selection Show podcast. Look forward to getting an opportunity to see you play Saturday, 2:30 against the Georgetown Hoyas. Certainly promises to be an entertaining one.
Thank you.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Penn head coach Mike Murphy, whose Quakers, coming off of Sunday's Ivy League championship game win over Yale, an incredible one-goal affair. And let's start there, Coach Murphy, because it was one of the best games I saw all season, and I was really impressed by your team's resilience and their ability to withstand and then respond to Yale's rushes when they tried to dig out of that early hole and continuously 2, 3, 4 times make a run at you. What did you see in that regard from your team today?
Yeah, Terry, exactly that, really. You know, we got a lead on them, I think it was 4-1, and then they come back and tie it at 4, and it happened 2 or 3 more times throughout the game, and I think it was really a statement of our resilience and our senior leadership, and I think our, you know, winning the face-off battle against Yale is significant. So I think our face-off guy Kyle Gallagher did a fantastic job, and they just, you know, we kept our poise on the sidelines, we kept our poise on the field, and our guys just kind of kept playing, and you know, obviously came out on top.
And on the broadcast, this Selection Show broadcast, you talked about your balance between your goalie play. You mentioned Kyle Gallagher, the faceoff guy. Certainly, you know, from Mark Vanchick and some of the other poles, your short sticks, BJ Farrar in the middle of the field, and then certainly Sam Hanley, who Paul Carcaterra referenced as a prospective first-team All-American midfielder as a freshman this season, and then a host of complimentary players, both goal-scoring attackmen, initiators, creators, do-it-all midfielders. It really feels like this is a special group. Is that a vibe that you've sensed? And particularly in the context of an 0-3 start and an 11-game win streak, when do you say, if so, maybe it started to feel like things were coming together?
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, and for me, you know, I've been at Penn for 10 years and been doing this for 28 years or something. So I have some context for that. But for these guys, you know, this is their one and only senior year, the senior group, and I think they understood what they needed to do to, you know, go out the way they wanted to go out. And so they made it a priority and have been committed to things and kind of been aligned with what they're doing really since the fall. And, you know, we started out 0-3, but the attitude was great, and we were playing good lacrosse, and we talked about how we felt like we were playing good lacrosse and just need to learn how to win. And, you know, that, I guess, subtle evolution from, you know, losing those one-goal games to Penn State, Maryland, to getting over the hump with a win over Villanova and then St. Joe's a couple days later, and then that leading into the Ivy schedule. We just kind of kept maturing. Some freshmen came along. The seniors continued to really nail down the messaging and the way they wanted to conduct themselves on and off the field. And here we are, you know, 2 months later and 11 games later. And you know, I think we're successful because they've taken that approach, and we've been kind of short-sighted and taking this one day at a time and one game at a time.
Saturday, 5 p.m. on ESPN, you'll take on the Army Black Knights coming off of a Patriot League championship on Sunday as well. What do you know about Coach Joel Barricci's team?
Yeah, not a lot, to be honest with you. I know they're always good defensively. They're very well coached. They seem to have a lot of good weapons on offense, but tactically don't know much about them at all. You know, we'll start to gather some film and stats and do some research tomorrow. But we'll also continue to look at ourselves. That's, I think, part of how it got to this point. When we generally spend Mondays, focused on us. And so we'll watch a little bit of our Yale and Brown films with our team tomorrow afternoon, while the staff is busy preparing for the Army scouting report. So don't really know much about them. I know Coach Alberese is a very good coach, and they've been a very good defensive team for years. So, we're looking forward to the challenge and excited to be playing lacrosse still.
So we'll leave you with this. Because there's still a fair amount of unknowns relative to what type of game you might expect against a team with whom you're unfamiliar, if there's one aspect of your performance that it's not a stat, it's not a metric, it's just a vibe that if I could assure you you were going to get on Saturday, you'd feel good about the outcome, what would it be? What do you really want to see out of your team?
I would say it would be juice. We call our energy juice, and we've been playing with a lot of it and having a lot of fun. And so I think if we can bring that juice on Saturday, then I think we'll be successful regardless of, how many ground balls we pick up or our shooting percentage or anything else.
Coach Mike Murphy, really appreciate your time. Best of luck as you continue to prepare this week, and we look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Great, Terry. Thanks for having me.
Penn hosting Army Saturday, 5 o'clock. The Penn Quakers, Ivy League champs, and they've won, 11 straight games now after that 0-3 start. I got to point out, though, you watch that tape, they should have beaten Maryland. Danny Dolan, the Terp goalie, made it a great save with 5 seconds to go. That's water down the stream right now, because Penn is one of the hottest teams in the country. I hate the fact that Penn and Yale are going to have to potentially go through one another to make championship weekend. I don't think that's right. I think they should do a better job of separating conference foes when they're so highly ranked. But first things first, they have to play the Patriot League champs, Army, and A.J. Barreto, their great goalie, Johnny Sertic, their tremendous defender. Now, the one area of this game that stands out to me are faceoffs. Army is a sub 40% faceoff team. And Gallagher of Penn is on fire. What he did in the Ivy Championship against T.D. Erland is something that I don't know has been done. Paul, how many times has TD lost a game like that in his third year at the collegiate level?
Maryland his freshman year in the playoffs.
Connor Mackey last year,
I think actually twice. Semifinal in the regular season for sure. And then the semifinal game was pretty close. So I think this would only be his third or fourth time.
Yeah, interesting. So that the possession advantage could be in Penn's favor. And if it is, you better look out, because Sam Hanley, as Paul so correctly labeled him, Paul Bunyan, even though he didn't shoot well in the Ivy title, he got to good spots, shooting 45% for the year. I'm just amazed at how two-handed he is. Simon Mathias, I'm so impressed with his game, Chris. Simon Mathias, I tell you, the maturity, the clock and score management, the ability to do a little bit of everything. I was really impressed with him. He's like a club player playing with younger guys.
And I mean, he's been there. Like, he came in Ben Franklin's freshman class. The two of them came in together. He's been there so long, so he's got that experience. And he just takes over the game. I mean, he takes over quarterbacking the game, and everybody's got to pay attention to him. And to Paul's point, when you got Hanley there running roughshod basically through a defense at that midfielder spot, really creates a lot of matchup issues for them. And it's a team that, collectively, I think they've got ice water in their veins. When a team like Yale, the defending national champs, makes a run at you in the second half of the Ivy League championship game, and you withstand that run and you get the eventual game-winning goal, kind of what they've done, what they did at Franklin Field earlier in the year. They withstand everybody else's hardest blow, and then they come back.
It's interesting because you mentioned ice water in their veins. They haven't won a playoff game in an awful long time. They were the 4 seed a couple of years ago and lost at home to Drexel, under Mike Murphy. This is the Penn Quakers. But during the playoffs, as Andy Shea told us this week on the phone, the distribution of pressure is evenly distributed amongst all competitors. Everybody's playing an elimination game. And you, if you want to attach a seed to your name, fine. I recommend that you don't. I recommend that you come in at 0-0 and everybody treat themselves unseeded. But I thought that was a good point for a team like Yale, who's dealing with expectations. And now Penn will feel potentially some pressure. They shouldn't. I think they'll go out. And the good thing is, you know you're going to get a great effort from Army coming into Franklin Field, because Army is going to show up and give them everything they got. I think this game will be scary close, closer than Las Vegas Lions predicts.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with Army head coach Joe Alberici, whose Black Knights won the Patriot League Sunday over Lehigh. And Coach Alberici, let's start there. It was a really impressive performance, particularly from your team, and the ability to dig out of an early hole. And obviously, that fourth quarter, oh my goodness, it felt like there wasn't a whole lot that you could do wrong. What did you see from your team on Sunday?
I was just really, really impressed with their toughness. And not that this was the first time all year, but to be in that kind of knockdown, drag out battle there, and to have been our third game in 5 days, to have that kind of fourth quarter to be able to step on the gas right there and make plays on both ends of the field to I think we outscored them 6-1 in the fourth quarter is really impressive. Really impressive, and I think a real testament to the cadets' mental and physical toughness.
Tell me about this team in terms of its balance from end to end. I think AJ Barreto is a known quantity as a 4-year starter. For me, knowing so much about Johnny Sturdick by reputation, when I stood next to him for the first time after the Navy game, it was jaw-dropping exactly how physically imposing he was. Watching Brandon Nichtern in person for the first time at that game really opened my eyes to the type of offensive facilitation. And then, as you would expect from any Army roster, the ability from a role player standpoint, guys accepting their responsibilities and having the physical stamina to continue to play late into the fourth quarter, including 12 quarters in a week, doesn't surprise, is what I should say. But beyond that, what should folks know about this team?
Well, I think it is a team that is extremely unselfish, and I would call that on the defensive end very unselfish, with just how they play, how they've really gotten to communicate here late in the season. And then on the offensive end, I feel the exact same way we've had a rotation of four attackmen and early in the season, Nate Jones, who's our captain, just wasn't playing as well as the others. He was just coming off an injury, and in crunch time against UMass and crunch time against Rutgers, Nate was on the bench and, just accepted it and kept getting better in practice. I mean, he's a 100-goal scorer, so he's, a terrific player, but it just, because he had missed all schools, fall across and a good portion of the spring, he just wasn't quite ready. And then, and then it kind of flipped over to Sean O'Brien, maybe not being that guy in crunch time. And then we bumped him into some midfield runs. And then, and then today Miles Silva was, a 39 goal scorer. He was on the bench during that long run today. And I just, it's a testament, and nobody's, hanging their head or, looking for explanations. It's just, a testament to their unselfishness. And hey, this is what's part of the plan right now. So let's do it. And, and you get the same thing out of our middies too, just guys that will do their job. And, I think that's probably one thing that has really stood out to me about this team. Bunch of great leaders, hard workers, but a very unselfish team also.
5 p.m. Saturday on ESPNU. You'll head to Franklin Field, take on the Penn Quakers, the number 4 seed and Ivy League champions. What do you know about Coach Mike Murphy's team?
I don't. I haven't seen them. I have not seen them. I'm aware of their success. 11 games in a row. Penn has never backed away from competition, so they play great competition. And then to win 11 in a row is really impressive. But the thing I do know for sure is I know Mike Murphy well, and we go back a long, long time, and he is an outstanding coach, So I know that the Penn team will be extremely well coached in all areas. So we'll get to work on them tomorrow, but we know they're really talented, and we know they got a great head coach. So it'll be and we're going to be doing it at their place, which, you know, will be a tough, you know, tough assignment for us. But I do like how we've played on the road, Terry. You know, I think we have 9 wins now on the road, maybe even 10. No, 9 wins on the road right now, and that's the most in the country. So our guys have played well on the road, and hopefully we've got it in us for another week.
And we'll end with this. I was reminded earlier today that 2 years ago, Army finished the season with 2 top 5 wins, the number 14 RPI, disappointed not to be included in the tournament field, and certainly this is the first trip back to the NCAA tournament since that very memorable 2010 NCAA tournament in which you went into the Carrier Dome and won a first-round matchup. So can you contextualize what it means for your team and your program to get back to this level, bookending the decade this way?
Yeah. No, I think the in-between, there was a lot of really good teams, you know, and there was a lot of changes in the Patriot League during that time, most namely Loyola. So, you know, there was some very good lacrosse being played in between. So I don't want to take anything away from those men, because great men, great leaders, and outstanding lacrosse players. But, you know, to kind of, you know, get back into the tournament, I was laughing with the guys watching the selection show via a phone, because we were still on the bus. But it felt much more comforting than it did a couple years ago when you just didn't know the answer. So, you know, I'm really happy for our guys. And this is a great win for the Army lacrosse family, because the number of alums that have, you know, consistently reach out. But, you know, over the last couple of days with the win over Loyola, and then again today, and just, you know, how proud they are of the team. And, you know, they have a big part of this, because there's a great 102-year tradition of Army lacrosse, and that's filled with some great men, great, great men. And, you know, just happy, happy for our current guys, but also really happy, you know, for the program, the Army lacrosse family.
Well, Coach Alberici, really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Best of luck as you continue to prepare for the Quakers. We look forward to seeing you in action on Saturday.
Thank you, Terry. Thanks for having me on.
Robert Morris invading Charlottesville Saturday, 7:30, the night game. I hope the Cavaliers bring the band and the mascot. And I hope they remember their basketball team 2 years ago losing to UMBC. But it's Robert Morris at 9-7. The Colonials' last 4 games, okay? At Bryant, they're down by 4. They won by 4. Against Hobart on Senior Day, they're down by 4 with 10 minutes to go. They won in overtime. At the Mount, they're down 12-7. And that's in Emmitsburg, man. That's a place you don't come home from. They won in overtime, 13-12. And against Hobart, down 6-3 in the third, they won 11-10. They've won 3 straight games when trailing after 3 quarters. It's almost like setting a record every time you put the extra weight on the bench and you start feeling invincible. Isn't that right, Chris Cotter?
You start to think about what they did last year, too, against Maryland. That the, you know, first round almost sprung the upset. It's not a team that you want to take lightly coming in, and it's a Virginia team that's flying high right now, playing maybe their best lacrosse, coming off maybe their best game in that ACC championship game. So it kind of sets up for maybe a little bit of a letdown for Virginia, at least early. Let's see if Robert Morris can hang in there early.
You know, I was really impressed with Virginia's defense against Notre Dame. But the work of their FOGO, Petey LaSala, has been outstanding. Max Adler, Team Israel, Bentley College, MLL. What do you got on Petey LaSala? He does have bigger arms than Cotter. And he's in a tank top right now. What's the book on Petey LaSala?
Petey LaSala is a great athlete. He was an all-state running back and has really quick hands and snaps down over the ball. But then I've been really impressed with the play after the ground ball. He had that sick behind-the-back goal against, can't remember who it was.
I think it was against Johns Hopkins.
Yeah,
where he ran right down Charles Street, according to Eamon McEnany.
He played both ends. What I like about this kid is he comes from a program, Rocky Point, where they asked him to do more than just face-off, a lot like you had to do in college, too, where you play multiple roles. So he's comfortable with the ball in his stick.
That's Paul Carcaterra. Romo last year went to Maryland, I believe, and gave the Terps everything they could handle. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's correct. So expect Romo to show up in Charlottesville Saturday, 7:30. It's a night game, the nightcap on ESPNU. All right, Towson's hosting Maryland. Here's the deal. For years, these two played each other. Maryland stopped playing Towson. They took them off the schedule. I think at the time they thought they were going to be an RPI drain. Maryland players didn't take Towson as seriously as perhaps Towson was the game of the year against the state school. This game's going to be really lit up. What's the deal with Maryland, Clark, coming off of two games where their defense was absolutely shredded by Johns Hopkins?
Yeah, I think off ball they had some issues in regards to playing some inside picks, and you know, the two-away slides were a little late. But for me, I think, you know, Maryland is the biggest puzzle in this entire bracket. And the reason being is they're a team that has championship pedigree. They've been to seven of the last eight Final Fours. But I could see them losing to Towson, but I could also see them going to a national championship. It's kind of a bizarre team because at their best, they've looked pretty good. I just wonder, outside of Bernhardt, can Bubba Fairman play like a big-time middie? Because I think
he's a little inconsistent. You know, yeah, the first game against Hopkins, he was outstanding. He was dominant. Yeah. And then in the second game, they took him out for shifts late in the ballgame. My question about Maryland really is, you know, close defender 2 and 3, and then their shorties. Towson, Brendan Sunday has had a wonderful season. That kid is a baller.
Yeah.
He is a baller.
I mean, he was a great basketball player in high school. You know, his high school coach was Donnie Ice.
Donnie Ice.
Billy Dwan's boy.
Yeah.
Donnie, so Donnie Ice coached him, and he would always booch Brendan Sunday to me and tell me how good he was. And then he struggled a little early in his career. But, I mean, he's so comfortable. He's massive. I mean,
righty, lefty, range, great passer, good hands, the deal. Yeah. Sean Nadlin. And then the Tigers hosting Maryland. The crowd should be outstanding. Anish and I will be on the call, we think. That's Sunday at 2:30. I tell you, Richmond's been such an impressive program, making their third NCAA appearance in six seasons for head coach Dan Tramati. I like this offense. Teddy Hatfield is really slick and the program's, you know, most productive player all time. Mitch Savaca, Tate Gallagher. The Spiders have a really good scoring defense, and their goalie is super strong. So, you know, this is not an easy game for Duke. The Blue Devils come in off a loss and an extra week off. They're a defensive-based team. Okay, Cade Van Rapport, JT Giles Harris, some excellent John Prendergast, I like a lot at the shorty position. Face-offs are kind of middling, as is goaltending. And offense has got to come from Nekhai Montgomery and Brad Smith. I'm really interested to see what type of changes Duke has made to their half-court offense. You know, do they go to single invert? Do they go to a big little behind the goal? Do they show any different patterns offensively? Because late in the year, they caught teams off guard when Smith moved back to midfield. And then after that, it got a little stagnant. So I'm just interested to see what the next wrinkle in John Donowski's offensive scheme is going to be. That game, I think, will be closer than people anticipate, Richmond and Duke. It's the last game of the weekend, and so it has a lot of significance, a night game at Arlotta. Johns Hopkins, runner-up finish in the Big Ten tournament. Notre Dame, runners-up in the ACC. These two teams met years ago in the NCAA tournament in a lightning game that was a big rain delay that was really a drama-filled contest, I remember calling. You know, where's Hopkins? Have they improved, or is that a little bit of a mirage? It's just a good matchup against the Terps? I don't know. Hopkins, back-to-back wins against Maryland. I thought it showed some great fight, though, Terry. You know, they hit the reset button, which is hard to do. I don't know how they did it, but they did after losses to Ohio State and Penn State. They won two against the Terps. Terps defense that is clearly struggling right now. Joey Epstein, Cole Williams, the undersized midfielders, you know, against the Notre Dame system, the gear defense. And the Fighting Irish, I think, have a ton of talent. And it wouldn't surprise me if they made a run toward championship weekend. But the issue is they haven't been able to play back-to-back or three games in a row all season long at a consistent level. Brian Costabile, outside shots. Gleason's a slasher. Jackavoice has got some speed. They can score in transition when they push it. But, you know, I just don't know what to expect from Notre Dame. I think this is going to be a great game, and the fans are going to be treated to two name programs on Sunday night. Clark will be out there with Matt Ward and Chris Cotter, and they'll, you know, tie together the whole first weekend. So you don't want to miss that one. It's 7:30. Sunday night, ESPNU.
Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check. Testing 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.